welcome to episode 21 of Checking the Gate, a film and religion podcast. I'm Robert Wright Stasko.
And I am Michael M. Patty.
And today we have a Stargate super special for you. We'll be talking about the movie Stargate and the TV show Stargate SG-1. Mainly we'll be talking about the semi-religious aspect to the show.
I think the word you're looking for is quasi-religious.
Quasi-religious. That's right. It does say some interesting things about what we think about ancient religions, how we perceive them today, and I think it links into some of the other movies that we have reviewed in the past.
So. Especially Thor, for reasons that will become clear later.
Yeah, so let's talk about the movie first. This movie has seen quite a few releases in home video.
Yes, it has, including a notable one from the dawn of the DVD format. My co-host here, at one time, he owns or owned, we're not entirely sure.
It's somewhere.
A early DVD from the 90s copy of the film Stargate. The movie didn't fit on one side of a disc. You had to take it out and flip it over to watch the whole thing. They didn't even make very many of those before the technology got to where you could watch a whole movie in one sitting. So this thing was a find, and now it's missing.
Yeah. I may have accidentally traded it in as I've been upgrading my Blu-rays.
Oops. I also traded my copy of the Stargate film in years ago, but on purpose because it was non-anamorphic and I couldn't watch it on my widescreen TV.
Well, mine has a zoom button, but it makes the picture look really bad.
I can do that through the TV and it doesn't look good.
Not at all. But yes, Stargate, the movie, the original film, came out in 1994. At
the same time as Star Trek Generations.
Yeah, and this one has its share of CG effects, but mostly a lot of model work, which impressed me. This is from the team of Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich, who would go on to make such...
such cinematic masterpieces as...
Godzilla.
Independence Day.
I believe they split up, but Roland after
one of
Godzilla.
Them.
But they want to go back and do a Stargate sequel. A cinematic sequel starring the original cast, Kurt Russell and James Spader.
Yeah, what else are they doing?
Not much. I haven't seen Kurt Russell in a lot, but James Spader, he's been busy on TV.
Kurt Russell pops up every now and again.
Yeah. He's been in some bad Disney movies, but that's how he started, so...
It's full circle.
Yeah. Yeah, they said they originally imagined the movie as a part of the first part of a trilogy, where the second part they would delve into either Greek or maybe Norse mythology, and then the third movie they would bring the Egyptian and the second movie together in one big awesome finale. So then they
define awesome.
Like
that seems like a really bad idea.
Like 2012 or The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh,
kind
okay.
Of awesome.
That kind of awesome.
Yeah.
I understand completely. And don't forget The Patriot.
The Patriot, that's right. Or my favorite, 10,000 BC.
Oh, God, that was them too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if the Devlin worked on him with that one, but it was definitely Emmerich.
It still counts.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew. It's funny when you see, like 2012, it says from the makers of Independence Day and Stargate. They won't put Godzilla.
No. I have to admit, Independence Day is the only one of those movies I actually kind of like.
And there's sequel talk on that one, too.
We'll be here all day if we start talking about that.
Randy Quaid returns. So... why don't you give us a rundown of the movie Stargate, Mike?
Daniel Jackson's an Egyptologist who gets roped into investigating some weird-looking round artifact that turns out to be the Stargate. They enlist some military muscle. They go through it. It turns out the aliens are humans who had been kidnapped from Earth years ago by aliens pretending to be Egyptian gods. The main bad one is an all-powerful being who is the guy from The Crying Game. The guy from The Crying Game. They blow him up, and they all live happily ever after. And along the way, there's some, like, shooting and adventure and stuff.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
It has some of the supporting cast. We mentioned Kurt Russell and James Spader.
James Spader.
Richard Kind is in this. He also pops up.
Who does Richard Kind play in this movie? You like that? No preparation.
He plays one of the other scientists.
He's the Rodney McKay of this movie.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. French Stewart plays.
Oh yeah, he plays Kowalski, and he's not on the show. They recast French Stewart for the show.
Yeah, but Kowalski, he dies like 4 episodes in, so they take care of the original cast pretty quick.
I remember on the commentary to the movie, they were saying that they thought Kowalski would be a great character for the show, and then they were disappointed that they killed him so soon.
Well, they do bring him back every time they do the alternate universe episodes. We'll get more into SG-1 later, but I talked a little bit about the effects before. You know, watching this again, they hold up surprisingly well, better than some other movies from the 90s. I think because they didn't rely so heavily on the CG, they used it for the Stargate effect, the whoosh of the wormhole forming. And
I like the wormhole whoosh and the ring transporters. I thought those were cool when I first saw it.
Yeah, and just thinking about it, there's a kind of similarity in the design of those. Like the Stargate was designed to create a stable wormhole between two points in space, and the ring transporters do that too, but on a shorter distance. You know, they kind of zap you, which is, I think, visually a lot different than the way we've seen energy transport and many other things. You know, Star Trek was so definitive in that sort of thing, and we see that all the time now. I mean, even Stargate SG-1 ripped that off as well. But the costumes, fantastic in this. The acting, maybe not so much. What do you think, Mike?
The costumes are outstanding. It's been a long time since I've seen it. I didn't rewatch it before we started recording. I don't remember the acting standing out like, oh my God, you have to see James Spader in Stargate.
This movie comes under the same kind of criticism in a lot of the action movies of the 90s. Like, oh, there's no character development. And they try to put some of that in there, especially with Jack O'Neill.
It's a jock and a brain. Yeah. That's your acting. What's my motivation? You're a soldier. Go.
Well, they try to put a little depth in there.
They gave him a beret. That's depth.
Well, he had just lost his son. And they deal with this in the show for a little bit. When he meets Skara on the planet, he kind of forms that kind of father-son relationship. But it's not deep enough to really compel you as a viewer. And sort of those shallow relationships that they have. And yeah, in many other movies, you know, like Godzilla and ID4.
Yeah, and the movie's not about that either. Yeah. The movie's about, hey, let's go to another planet and fly some ships and blow stuff up.
Yes. But what is interesting in this show, as far in terms of religion, is how the ancient Egyptian religion is recast and made more believable for the modern audience.
For all the people who were interested in converting to ancient Egyptian.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. That might be something to see if there's still people who are praying to the sun god. Because we did find people in the good old U.S. of A. who are praying to Odin and Thor and stuff. So that's interesting. But
they're going to hate the SG-1 series then. But more on that later.
Yeah. But in this, Daniel Jackson is... He starts out very much as like the Dr. Andre Tsoukalos from the Ancient Aliens, the meme, the master of the meme himself. I'm not saying aliens, but aliens. And that's what Daniel Jackson is saying. And no one believes him until they find the Stargate. And he's like, I was proved correct. This is all true. This is, I should say this was the inspiration for Thor. Or they, you know, the ancient... The movie Thor, the recent Marvel movie Thor, where he was recast not as the Norse god, but as an alien. In that movie, we talked about how they quote Arthur C. Clarke, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
That's what you call magic, we call science.
Right. Science. And
Jane Foster.
It's not so much a theme in the movie, but in the TV show, that is so much a theme, is that Clark's third law. But I've done some research and found, you know, Clark's three laws, you know, because Amazoff had his and Newton had his. So Arthur C. Clarke had to have his three laws. So the first law is one is a distinguished but elderly scientist states that something is possible, he is almost certainly right. When he states that something is impossible, he is very probably wrong. So this is Daniel Jackson. He's saying, there's aliens and they come and they thing and then it's possible. And then people are like, no. And then he proves that everything is possible. He deciphers the Stargate and finds out that all the little symbols are
coordinates,
constellations.
Ah.
And they turn into coordinates. But when you think about it on the show, that's not going to make sense, because how would they know where to dial if every planet has its own constellations? How would they know which symbols to dial to get back home?
That's why they have it hooked up to a computer, I guess.
Yeah. But they
Wait,
have
something on SG-1 didn't make sense.
Yeah. Again, we'll talk about that later. But yeah. And the second law of Clark's is the only way of discovering the limits of the possible is to venture a little way past them into the impossible. So that's their show. It might be possible to travel to other worlds, but it's kind of impossible to do it through a stable wormhole that ancient aliens put on this planet. But I think the movie holds up. I think what works in its favor is it's a science fiction movie that takes place present day. You know, most sci-fi takes place in the future. You have Game of Thrones, which is very distant past. This show takes place here and now today, which gives it, I think, a little more credibility, especially in terms of the characters and how they deal with things and how we Americans just go blundering in and blow stuff up. And
that's my... I'm waiting for that.
So, yeah, well, let's talk about the ending of this movie.
Kurt Russell discovers that Roz on the ship and blows it up. And
yeah, instead of trying to discover, oh, hey, how was life like 10,000 years ago? Are you going,
well, wasn't,
you know, let's have a, we're more like equals now. Let's try and work for a peaceful solution now. That's no fun. Let's blow it up.
I'm willing to, because their lives were in danger, that's all well and good. My complaint comes from on the show when there is no danger, and they go in and immediately start shooting, which happened in a couple of the episodes that I previewed.
Yeah. Well, I think now is a good time to go. So let's final thoughts on Stargate the movie.
It's all right.
It's all right. It's a good watch. It's a fun movie. I wouldn't watch it all the time, but it's the one that kind of spawned everything else.
It's Kurt Russell's best beret acting,
and he's had a few of those, like Soldier. That's his worst beret acting.
I don't even know what that is. Is Tom Berenger in that?
I don't remember. He plays this super soldier who's like kind of brought back to life and programmed like a robot. And
oh, so it's like, yeah, Universal Soldier or Solo or
exactly
a couple other movies.
Yeah, there was a bunch of those in the 90s. All so right. It was the Stargate was a stretch for him. Okay, I better quit before
you insult Kurt Russell and he comes over here and beret whips you.
He would. I would be hurting. All right, so let's go to our TV corner and talk about SG-1.
So I have to start out by making a confession. I hated Stargate SG-1. I mean, when it first came on, it was on Showtime, which I didn't get, and so I never got into it. I'd seen a couple episodes. I'm sure I saw the first one on a free preview. I remember sitting there and watching it and thinking, meh. And so I never got into it. My wife liked it, so having to rewatch a couple episodes that Robert picked out, I thought I'd, you know, give it a chance. Well, all right, there's a bunch of them. I'll, you know, get through a couple. And I do not like the show. So I may be a little harsh toward it, but one of the reasons I didn't like it, first of all, it's the lowest common denominator. It's like the Walmart of sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's the most generic. People whose favorite Star Trek movie is Star Trek IV, like Stargate SG-1. It's lowest common denominator. It's let's have some special effects and witty banter and lots of shooting for people with low attention spans. And like I said before, at least one of the episodes, if not more, it was in the first season. Jack and Teal'c get trapped in some cave with, one of the first Ga'uld hosts, voiced by James Earl Jones. They hear him making scary noises, and before they even see him in person, Jack has opened fire. What I got from that was that, let's pretend for a second the show is worthy of scholarly criticism. What they were saying was these other creatures were considered gods, and we're going to come in and kill the savages, and our gods are better than yours. This is the way we are. That's what I took away from the handful of episodes I watched. It's very jingoistic, and I did right. not care for that.
Right. Our god is science. Our god is science.
Our god is weapons and the military, and the Air Force.
Right. This is Clark's third law that runs this entire show. I like to call it Clark 316. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So basically, in the show, they find out that the Stargate goes to more than one planet, not just Abydos from the movie. And they find that...
Which you'd think they would have realized at some point between when the movie ended and the show started.
Yeah.
look, there's a whole bunch of symbols. This thing does more than one thing.
Well, they had to find the right address. And then they found a cartouche with all the addresses on Abydos. Turns out that Ra, he was a human who had an alien inside of him. And he looks sort of like... In the movie, you see him sort of glow sometimes, a few times, where it looked like underneath his skin, there was like one of those pale gray aliens from Close Encounters just underneath the surface. They reinvent this for the TV show where it's a snake-like creature called a Ga'uld, who they kind of enter your body and snake around your brainstem and live as a parasite. So, and there's a bunch of these, because it wasn't just Ra. There's Anubis, Baal, Apophis, who's the main bad guy of the TV show. They changed some things from the movie and established their own sort of mythology. One of the worst crimes is, all these Ga'ulds came and they were like ancient Mesopotamian gods or Egyptian gods. But it turns out that the Norse gods were not noble aliens from Valhalla like in the Marvel Thor.
They were ancient aliens.
It's like little gray men. They're about waist high. They're called the Asgard is what they call them.
But could it have been aliens? Some scientists think maybe. It always comes back to ancient aliens on this show. Always.
Well, yeah. And that is an interesting trend. We talked about Prometheus, about Space Jesus. Thor is an alien. Thor is an alien again here, and so are all the other ancient gods. We see a proliferation of this idea that magic is really just advanced technology. There's no wonder left. There's no mystery left. It's like, okay, we're just going to go in, shoot them up, and conquer, because that's what we do. We're going to find this technology. It's not magic, it's just technology. We're going to find it, we're going to appropriate it, and we're going to use it. In fact, several times on the show, they talk about their standing orders, which are to go and find this technology to help them fight more aliens.
Yeah, that's the prime directive. Not non-interference, not observe and record, but never interfere. Wait, that's Highlander. Anyway, but yeah, go and pilfer and plunder.
Yeah.
And use as many rounds as necessary.
Yeah, and when SG-1 fails to do this, when they decide, oh, you know what, we're not we won't like steal this device that keeps this planet's weather stable. Another covert government operation says, okay, we're just going to go in and steal that. And that's one of the sort of side story arcs of the show is the IOA or the Trust. They come in and they do all these, you know, nasty things, and they care less about people than SG-1 does. It's a comment, I think, on American military thinking, and, you know, they cast these guys as the bad guys, but they're still the United States, and this is the kind of thing that we do in real life as well. We'll just come in, shoot them up. This is our stuff now. We're going to drill oil here. Go away. This was from the, I'd say, mid-90s to the mid-aughts, mid-2000s.
That sounds right.
And there is a couple American wars during this time, you know, Gulf War.
Gulf War was before the movie.
Oh, really?
91.
Wow, that long ago.
Uh-huh.
Wow, I'm that old.
Yes, you are.
Oh, man.
Your powers are weak, old man.
I'm 37. I'm not old.
37?
Anyways.
Bunch of savages in this town.
Anyways, I think this movie did cast the American military as the good guys, and we're always good. And Samantha Carter, you know, she, more so than Daniel, she was sort of the religious center of this movie because her faith is in science. And she always would techno-babble the solution that they were looking for to at the end of every episode, and they'd go home happy, blow up the bad guy.
Not necessarily in that order.
Yeah. Well, you know, the show always followed the same format. They'd arrive on a planet. Something would happen. They get stuck or captured or shot at. And they deal with this problem for another 30 minutes. And then the last 10 minutes, Carter's like, oh, I discovered a solution. Blah, 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 blah. Make a wormhole, Nakodo reactor, and Bob's your uncle. Let's go home. So, yeah.
Do you want to talk about Ascension and when they introduced that?
Yeah, that was like third or fourth season.
I think it was like five or six because that's when I stopped caring.
Yeah, they find out that it wasn't the Goa'uld or even the Asgard who built the Stargate. It was the Ancients, a race of humans that lived millions of years before us and everybody else, and they have since ascended. It's, I don't know, sort of like in Buddhist religion, and that's where they originally framed it, was sort of like a Buddhist monastery. And through tranquil living and a scientific exploration, they discovered that they could transform into these energy beings. This comes more into play in the 9th and 10th season, after the show has really jumped the shark. main character Jack O'Neill has left. They bring in...
look at all the great stuff Richard Dean Anderson went on to after Stargate.
Yeah. Well, he actually left to spend more time with his kids.
Oh, okay.
So he wasn't... He was winding down his career. I mean, he had two major shows under his belt. I think that's good enough.
Yeah, 7 seasons of MacGyver, 8 seasons of Stargate. That's...
Yeah. And he showed up for guest roles on SGU and everything. But they bring in reinforcements from Farscape, which had been canceled off Sci-Fi Network.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Browder and Claudia Black, and they had defeated the Goa'uld and all the other bad guys they invented. So they had to invent some more, and these are the Ori. They're sort of the evil version of the Ancients who had ascended. They demand worship because the worship of the people who bow down to them gives them this tremendous power, and they want to use this power to conquer more galaxies and get more power. And they don't explain exactly quite how that works, but
yeah, if you've got to demand worship, you're probably doing it wrong.
Yeah. And that's the point that they make over and over. You can't do that. You can't force people. And we need to believe what we want to believe. And we believe in science, not what you believe. What you believe is wrong, so we have to go convince you that these gods are false as well. So
I bet guns were involved.
Lots of guns were involved. Bigger
Excellent.
Guns. They had
Good.
Asgard guns.
Good.
They do invent bigger, better guns all the way through because they had to fight the replicators. Not, these aren't the replicators on Star Trek that make you T. Earl Grey hot. These are the kinds that form little bugs and they go...
I saw the replicators.
Yeah, and they eat all your metal on your ship and make more replicators. And
you know somebody in the Stargate writer's room thought that was hilarious when they named them that.
Oh, yeah. And then they built starships with transporters like on Star Trek. And they...
And one of them was captained by a bald man.
Yes. Yeah, several bald men.
Oh, yeah. Including somebody who had been on Star Trek.
Yes. Yes.
Named Picard. Oh.
He became the captain of the starship Atlantis.
Something on Atlantis.
Yeah. Yeah, because after they canceled Stargate SG-1, Atlantis went on for two more seasons. Samantha Carter was on one season, and then Robert Picardo for the fifth season, and then they ended that.
I kind of liked Atlantis. It was okay. It was never my favorite show, but it's my favorite Stargate show.
Yeah.
Because it had cool people on it. I liked Jason Momoa on it.
Yeah, Jewel State.
Jewel State, Robert Picardo.
So, yeah, there's a good sci-fi pedigree in there.
And Dr. McKay was funny. I liked him.
Yeah. In the original Stargate, I remember watching that first episode with him, and they really made you hate him, but I couldn't because I liked him so much in Stargate. And I'm like, that's just McKay. I like him. And they're like, we're sending you to Russia. But eventually, I think they did right by that character. But there wasn't so much religious tension on Atlantis as there was on Stargate, especially, like I said, those last two seasons. Near the end, there's an episode called The Line of the Sand, where Carter is working on this cloaking device to hide these villages from the Ori so they couldn't demand their worship. And she gets wounded when the Ori show up. She is lying in bed, sleeping, trying to heal. And she wakes up. She talks to Mitchell, played by Ben Browder. She talks how she spent the last 10 years using science to take down false gods and tell people about science and how she's believed in science. And now she thinks science is going to let her down because she's going to die. And she doesn't know if she believes in God or even if there is one. And Mitchell says, well, you know, it's not so much what you believe. It's that you believe in something. It's that you have belief.
Wait, didn't somebody else say that from an episode we already did?
Yeah.
Yeah, Shepherd Book from Firefly said that. I think it's in the movie Serenity to Mal.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that's right. It's like, I don't care what you believe, just believe in something. That's another thing that I think is a paradox in our society is that we criticize people for believing in something like Christianity. Like, I believe in Jesus Christ. And you say that Jesus, and people freak out. And it's like, ah, you're so close-minded and blah, 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 blah.
I'm freaking out on the inside.
I couldn't tell. It's so strange that, you know, it's like, oh, but if you believe, it's the power of belief, like in the Polar Express, you know, that's the moral of the story. Just believe. I read in one of my classes, belief is something you squeeze out like toothpaste out of a tube. You know, it's like you knuckle down and you're like, I believe. And that's not how belief works. You know, it's not just believing. It's you have to have something to believe in.
I believe a man can fly.
Hey, you listened to all that marketing in 1978,
didn't you? It was, I was at a very young age then. It sunk in.
Yeah, I believe too. We're of course talking about Superman, Richard Donner Superman. That was the tagline for that. But the end of Stargate, the last episode, is horribly unsatisfying.
They knew they were coming back to do movies.
But so the movie, The Arc of Truth. Very interesting title.
We probably don't need to talk about Continuum, do we?
No.
They made a time travel-esque Stargate movie that's actually the last SG-1 thing they did, and it's utterly inconsequential.
Yeah, the Arc of Truth actually ties up all the Ori storyline. They find this Ark, Daniel Jackson, finally becomes more like Indiana Jones, searching for the Ark, digging. First scene of the movie, they find something and they find out they're digging in the wrong place. So they go to the Ori galaxy, which, like every other planet they found in the Pegasus Galaxy, or our galaxy, looks a lot like Canadian pine forest.
Yeah. Watch certain episodes of Smallville, Psych, Battlestar Galactica, Stargate SG-1.
X-Files.
X-Files. I think Hercules and Xena. You will see familiar woodland. I call it that forest in Vancouver. It's where they shot Kobol on Battlestar Galactica is that forest in Vancouver. And once you see it, you'll see it everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like the rock formations in Star Trek that was used in every Western in that period of time. So they find the Ark in the Ori Galaxy, made by the ancients before they left to come to our galaxy, and they're fighting with the Ori back millions of years ago. They plug it in, and they show it to a prior, and the Ark shows you what is true. Now, there's, I think, a little misconception of the definition between fact and truth, which I'll get into in a second, but they show you what is true. So they Julian Sands plays the head prior, who are the people who the Ori give powers to go convert more people. And they show it to him, and there's this blinding light and shows him the truth. Basically, they blinded him with science. And he sees the truth, and he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, have mercy on me. They show this to all the priors, and they see the truth, which is that the Ori are these ascended beings. They're not actually gods, and they're not going to pray to them anymore. And so then the last Ori just gets in a fight with one of the ancients, one of the ascended beings who kind of followed Daniel Jackson around, and Morgan Le Fay, you know, who fought.
Wasn't that Marina Baccarin?
Yes, she played the Ori Adria. She was like,
oh, okay.
She was the Orisai. She was.
I knew she was in this movie.
Yeah, in the show, she was immaculately conceived by the Ori into Claudia Black. She had him. She grew up like in 2 days, and then after this, she went on to play a very different and more fantastic alien invader in V.
And now she's on Homeland.
Oh, I'm gonna watch that now. I've not seen Homeland, but I've heard lots of good things about that. So,
it won a bunch of Emmys last year, and I think it's.
Did it get some Golden Globes this year?
Maybe.
I didn't pay attention to the Golden Globes this year.
I only saw the first episode, and
there's been a dearth of science fiction and on TV, and only a few movies if you count comic book movies. So let me ask you this, and I think this is the. It seems to be the point of the whole show, and one that, you know, if the show was on for 10 seasons, and I did like the show at times, at points, so, and admittedly, my attention span isn't all that great, so I liked the big explosions, they were cool, and the fights, there's quite a few space battles at the end of the seasons that were terrific, that I liked. So, yeah, that held my interest. Bigger guns, better. But the whole point of the show at the end was science is the only thing you really need to believe in. Everything else is false, you know? That was sort of Tilk's tagline was, Apophis is a false god. You know, they even after they killed him, it's like, hey, Tilk, you want to go bowling with me? Apophis is a false god. I figured that out already, but I just wanted to, you know, do you want to go out? Apophis is a false god. Okay, dude, I'll leave you alone. So it's like all the gods are false, and the only thing we need to follow is science. But it's a mixed message, because look at where it got them in the show. In deeper and deeper doo-doo with more and more aliens. Let's go in and just blow stuff up. Well, we're going to come back and get you because you blew up all our stuff. What do you think, Mike?
I think the less said, the better. I agree with whatever you have to say today. Like I've said about some other things that we've reviewed, I'm not sure that this was meant to be a college-level discourse on religion and philosophy. I think it was just there to provide a little more depth in you know, while they were setting up the pyrotechnics for the next explosion.
Let me pose you this question.
Okay.
Given that, you know, that's the point. Science is God. Everything else is false. Do you think that underlying message helped the popularity of the show? That's something that a lot of people in America today would agree with?
Absolutely not. No, there's no way people think science is... It's commerce that matters today more than science.
That's a good point. I would agree with that.
And speaking of commerce and Stargate, Robert, why don't you tell the audience what I'm sitting next to?
Oh, yes. During my research for the show, going on Stargate Wiki, I found an article saying that a company called Bestlock. Okay, think of Legos, think of Mega Bloks, think of cheaper than cheap, okay? Bestlock. We're coming out with officially licensed Stargate SG-1 construction sets. I said they would come out in Canada, and then in October they would be released in America at Sears and Family Dollar stores. So for the last 4 months, I've been looking for these Stargate Legos.
Like nonstop, didn't eat or sleep or anything.
No, I did not. It's been a long fast. I finally found it last weekend at Family Dollar in Kenmore. It was like the last one. It was $10 for a 250-piece set. It's the Jaffa Outpost. It comes with two little Jaffas, a Death Glider, and the Stargate. So me and my son, Quinn, we had fun putting it together. They don't come apart very easily. They're not nearly as good quality as Legos, but man, was it fun to build. So I'll put a picture of it on the blog post. And they also have a larger set, which I've seen for like $20. I think you could see this on ThinkGeek. I'll put that link up for anyone who wants to see it. It's a big playset with a couple Death Gliders. I think it has a pyramid and the whole SG-1 team. And then they have another set, which is the Starship Prometheus, which, you know, they built, what, 5 or 6 seasons in after they'd ripped off enough technology to start building their own spaceship.
I want a Lego TARDIS.
Everyone wants a Lego TARDIS. I've seen people build them online.
Yeah.
But I don't think they've come out with an officially licensed
no.
one. I think that maybe Mega Bloks has put out something in England, but not here. Well, you know, you should hear my wife's comparison of Stargate. I should have mentioned this earlier, but the show Stargate SG-1 is not based so much on the movie as it is on Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Okay, now let's look at the characters, okay? You have the plucky character who always gets captured and they have to go back and rescue them. That's Daphne and Scooby-Doo. That's yep. Daniel. Daniel is Daphne. Okay, then you have the smart chick who always comes up with the answer, Thelma.
That's Sam.
That's Sam Carter. You have Shaggy, who just goes wherever he's told and always chases the monster, you know, or gets chased by the monster. That is, of course, Jack O'Neill. Teal'c, he's Scoob. Because every once in a while, you know, he gets captured and Shaggy's like, we gotta go back for Scoob. That's Jack O'Neill. And then Freddy, you know, he's either Donis Davis or Bo Bridges, you know, the general who has the idea, we gotta go get this gang. And Ben Browder, he of course is Scrappy.
Of course.
So, and there was an episode called, this is so hilarious, it's called Bounty, where SG-1 has really angered the Illusion Alliance, one of these... They killed all the bad guys, so I had to invent another one.
Yeah.
So all these bounty hunters come to Earth and try and capture SG-1.
We don't need their scum.
That's right. So anyways, there's one bounty hunter who he kind of gets all the other ones out of the way. And he's just got SG-1. He calls his ship over. They're going to ring it up on the ship. And... turns out the rest of SG-1 is there to rescue Daphne, and they foil the bounty hunter, and they're all take turns explaining how they do it, and honest to God, Daniel says, and you would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for us meddling kids. So... I show that to my wife, and she recently had her gallbladder removed, and she about busted all her stitches laughing. I was in trouble after that. It was so...
Yeah. But yeah, somehow it was on for 10 seasons,
it
folks.
Scooby-Doo's been on longer than that. So if it worked for Scooby-Doo, it can work for Stargate.
There we
SG-1.
Go. There we go. All right, let's wrap up.
So for next time, we're going to talk about a Greek movie. We're going to go to the original Clash of Titans.
Oh, I thought you were going to say My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
There's some religion in that, but it's... have you ever actually seen that movie?
Yes, I did once.
Yeah.
It was okay. It was a chick flick.
Yeah. It talks a little bit about the Eastern Orthodox religion, but it's about as much as they talk about Catholicism and The Godfather. So, but we're going to...
That's right. Robert just compared My Big Fat Greek Wedding to The Godfather. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah.
All right, on that note.
On that note.
Next month is our show, as we started to say before we went down a rat hole.
Modern-day Greek myths, or reimagined. We have the original Clash of Titans we're going to watch because it's so much better than the remake. But we'll talk about the sort of rash of modern-day Greek movies. You have Clash of the Titans, Wrath of the Titans, Percy Jackson, and also in March, the new one will be coming out. So we're going to talk about this sort of fascination with Greek myths now and all through history, whether they are really Greek myths or...
I've seen some of those movies, and I think rash is absolutely the right word.
And in our TV corner, we'll be discussing... We mentioned this before on another show, but not really delved totally into it, is the recently wrapped up Fringe. This last Friday.
Yeah.
So a week ago.
3 days as of this recording.
It seems like forever. I can't live without Fringe now.
That's what DVDs and streaming are for.
Yeah, you're right. So, but we will be discussing that and...
And if I may interject, they left it wide open. So
oh, yeah. We'll be talking about that.
We'll see.
Mike, he ever lives in hope.
I'm still waiting for the Quantum Leap movie.
Well, you'll probably get a Stargate movie before then. So you can find us on the internet at www.ctgpodcast.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just go to each of those websites and search for CTG Podcast, all one word. And you can also follow Mike
and Michael M. Patty on Twitter.
So until next time, this is Robert saying keep the faith.
And Mike saying peace out.